Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Keith.
All right, so ready to get this thing going. Welcome, first of all, to the Crossover family. Welcome to the stadium.
Thank you.
Why don't you go ahead and give us? Why don't you go ahead and give us a little introduction of yourself?
Of myself? Wow. Okay. Well, Jada J, from Newark, New Jersey. Went to Malcolm X Bass High School. Graduated. Got a full ride to Fordham University playing basketball. After Fordham University, graduated and played overseas a little while. Did Ireland, Spain, and Greece. Came back home. Been working with the kids, teaching, coaching, a little bit of everything. Social worker. Been a little bit of everything since I've been home. Now jumping
That's
back
right.
into this journalism stuff and blogging and all that good stuff.
Nice, nice. That's good. Well, today, just give the guests an idea of what we're going to be discussing on the show. We're going to take a look at athletes and the issues that they face every day and why it is that whenever they do something, you know, it's magnified by the media. You know, why is it that we have such a hard time accepting athletes as regular people, as being just like you or myself? So we're going to have a good show for you guys.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We're going to have a great show for you guys. We got a guest today by the name of Tony Farmer, 11 or 12-year NBA veteran, played with the Charlotte Hornets, also played with the Los Angeles Lakers, Golden State Warriors, Cleveland Cavaliers. So, looking forward to making this thing do what it do today.
Definitely.
So, go ahead.
Now I'm just thinking, you asked a question earlier, why is it that, you know, everything that athletes go through, it's kind of like we aren't people, or it's glorified in not only mainstream America, just period. I think everything
right.
is magnetized when it comes to athletes. Because, let's be real, once you get to a certain level, you're an entertainer.
Absolutely. There's no real privacy either.
Yeah, I mean, you know the life. You played for the Clippers. You had, you know, the cameras in your face at every turn, and you had different events in your life that were caught on video and publicized to the world.
Without a doubt. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one thing that we want to, you know, bring to the audience's attention, you know, because they think that because of the fact that we make a certain amount of money that we shouldn't make some of the mistakes that we make. Yet when we do, you know, it's not looked at as a same, you know, as a regular 9-to-5 having guy, you know, who's making the same mistakes or sometimes even worse.
Mm-hmm.
And they're quick to
mm-hmm.
throw that in our faces, you know, well, you make so much money, but it's not the money that makes the person. You know, money doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to make all the right decisions all the time. You know,
mm-hmm.
money
mm-hmm.
doesn't. Money also doesn't equate total happiness. You know, if I had all that money, I wouldn't do this, I wouldn't do that. You know, most of the time people wouldn't know what the hell they would do with a little bit of money that they have now.
That's true. That's very true.
You know? Everybody's, you know, everybody's an expert in their own right, I guess, you know. But at least they'd like to think they're experts.
So, but why, I don't know, I feel like everybody who's not an athlete wants to be an athlete. So, therefore,
oh, without a doubt,
everything is just magnetized. Like, if you can't do it, you want to be a part of it.
Right. Right. You know, a lot of people aren't built for it. They aren't built for that lifestyle. You know, a lot of people, you look at the athletes that we have today, you know, they come from situations where you know, there wasn't a lot of income brought into the house. So, you know, that's an immediate adjustment that they have to make to their lifestyle, you know, from
exactly
having, you know, some guys unfortunately don't come from two-parent homes. They come from single-parent homes, you know, where they've got a mother or a father that's worked all their lives to take care of them and their siblings, you know, and at the blink of an eye, you know, they wake up and they're millionaires. They got millions of dollars in their bank account, you know, and that's something, that's a big thing to try to adjust to. Because guys don't, I don't know anybody who grew up like that, you know, who came up with a silver spoon in their mouth and then went on to make millions of dollars, you know. A lot of the guys I know, they came from the struggle, you know, and fortunately through sports, they were able to make their money, you know.
Do they give, I know in the NFL they have like a certain rookie camp or something like that, introduction to the lifestyle, where they give different classes when the NFL rookies come into the league. Is that, do they do the same thing for the NBA?
Yeah, they do the same thing for the NBA. They absolutely do. They have, as a matter of fact, my rookie year, they had MC Hammer come in and talk to us.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
So they
you
have
learn
people.
From MC Hammer, dude? Like, if you can't learn from
right.
MC Hammer.
No, I didn't learn from MC Hammer. As a matter of fact, I went outside, beat myself over the head with a hammer.
Oh, man.
Called life.
Yeah. Like, you really had, we were talking earlier, and you really had a lot of different experiences in your short time on this earth. Like, you have definitely lived a full life already. You want to, like, elaborate on some of the things you went through and why, maybe?
A lot of it was, you know, feeling like I was, you know, I had done all the work that I had to do, you know, I was ready. I was ready. You know, there's nothing that they're going to tell me. All right. We got a caller right now. You guys want to go ahead and bring them in? 646-721. Caller, you there? All right. There's something going on with the callers. Hold on 1 second. Paul, are you there? Jed, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, well, something's wrong. I guess we're having some difficulties.
Okay, well, that's okay.
With the switchboard. Hold on 1 second. I'm getting a text message right now.
So I can definitely, I know.
All right. I think he's here. Hello?
Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Tony?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
All right.
Hey, Tony,
welcome
how
to the
are
stadium.
You?
I'm doing good. Thank you. How are you guys
yeah,
doing?
Welcome to the stadium, man. We're doing good. Hey, today we're discussing, you know, the problems that these NBA players are having. And, you know, most notably, Lamar Odom's situation. And why is it that, you know, when professional athletes do something that maybe the regular 9-to-5 working man does, it's magnified and it's blown up in the media when we have people doing it every single day, but they're not garnering the same attention, you know, and why is it that some of these players are struggling to make adjustments?
I think a big portion is, you know, a lot of these guys go from, you know, homeless to hero in a matter of months. You know, you go through a high school career, you go through a college career, and all of a sudden you're thrown in the mix of millions of dollars that you're just not used to holding, and you're dealing with fame that you're not used to withstand. So the amount of pressure that comes with a professional athlete is enormous. So if he gets a speeding ticket, if he walks down the street and gets in trouble, it's magnified because if you look at it, negativity sells. Positivity doesn't always sell. So any kind that can bring a negative connotation with an athlete that can be magnified is going to be a moneymaker for the media, for the magazines, for the paparazzis. And that's why you have like the Us magazines, the People's, the National Enquirer. That's why they've been withstanding long relationships because of the fact that they just promote garbage. So the problem that you see today is, you know, from when we were coming up playing, I didn't have that AAU coach who was, you know, telling me what decisions I needed to make. I had my parents and myself. Now you got entourages at the age of 12, 13, 14, and they're coming up with, you know, 8 or 9 people. Then you got people saying, okay, he's going to do 1 year and done. And the problem that you see today is a lot of these kids are just misled in every aspect of their life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're so right about that with the AAU kids having the entourages today. You know, it's like they're being robbed of their childhood.
It's, you know, it's almost like you're branding
Jackson,
children.
It's almost like
now.
The Jackson 5. You know, Jackson 5 wasn't able to have a childhood, you know, and they're very sheltered. You know, so when it came time to do things that regular kids their age were doing, they didn't handle it too well all the time.
Right.
You
look at the aspect of, you know, you got a player come into the fold and he's been told by, you know, by so many people that he's going to do this and do that. And, you know, they have two decisions to make. Either they're going to make it or they're going to break themselves. And a lot of times you look at the stories of the Antoine Walkers and these guys who've made millions and millions of dollars and for whatever reason they lost it. But, you know, you can't expect a young man or a young woman who's never been taught how to manage money, how to write a check, how to sit there, balance your own book to create miracles. And then you realize that bank account starts depreciating and life begins after basketball. And I was talking to a young man last night as I was at the Cal State Fullerton fundraiser they have for their team. You know, I was talking to him. I was like, you know, your plan A and your plan B have to match. You know, basketball can't be your plan A and then life have to be your plan B. Your plan B has to be the same as your plan A. And, you know, that's why you commend the players like the Jamal Mashburns, the Junior Bridgmans, guys like that, because they prepare themselves, you know, for life after basketball, during basketball. And a lot of these young players don't realize basketball is nothing but a stepping stone to the next aspect of that life called grown up.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
So, I mean,
I have a question for you guys.
Go ahead.
I feel like in the NBA, you guys get a lot of different choices and classes and this, that, and the third. Do you think it's still given on the women's side as well? I find that for my own personal everything going through, is that the guys kind of get still all the different avenues and lessons, and we as females are kind of just second nature. Do you guys find that even...
I agree with that. And the problem that I see, too, from the female aspect is I think any professional athlete, whether you're a male, female, I think everybody should be given the even playing field. I personally think that, you know, the same things that are offered in the NBA should be offered in the WNBA, meaning that that mentorship program for the NBA, the WNBA needs to do the same thing, just based on the fact that at the end of the day, everybody are athletes, everybody are people. But the thing is, I think a lot of people look down on women are one in professional sports because it's not first nature, it's second nature. So if you look at the NBA, if you look at these lingerie football, all these things that women try to subject themselves, they look down on or cast upon because they decide to take the plunge of being a professional athlete. And I think that the preparation is the biggest key to make sure everybody's on an even playing field, male and female.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, the women have put in just as much hard work as the men have. You know, when you go back to, you know, the days of Nancy Lieberman Klein, you know, and the things that she's done way back in the day, you know, before there was a Cheryl Swoops, you know, before there was a Lisa Leslie, Nancy Lieberman was a woman who was, you know, she was trendsetting. You know, she was the first woman to actually play with Harlem Globetrotters, you know, and giving women a serious consideration as far as basketball. And then you got Billie Jean King with tennis.
Oh, she's
you know,
done amazing
she was
things
challenged.
In tennis.
Right. She was challenged back in the day and, you know, had to, you know, put her foot in somebody's butt on the tennis court, you know, just to prove that women could be just as good as the men. You know,
or even
but,
her
yeah,
initiative.
Like Tony said, right. And like Tony said, you know, they need to provide the same level playing field for the women as they do for the men. You know, and that's the best way to have it. You know, it'll make things not only more competitive, but, you know, it's going to give these little girls more and more of something to dream for, you know, something
Definitely.
To reach out for.
I mean, if you think about professional sports as a whole, and you look at, you know, like Lamar's situation, you know, Lamar come from a background that's been unstable since he was a child.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
when you look at the critique that he gets, that, oh, he's had this drug problem, he's had this, he had that. At the end of the day, he's a human being first,
a
number
human.
One.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, whatever decisions he's made, he's always ridiculed because the choices that he's made has been escalated as opposed to people rallying around. And, you know, you can look at organizations and saying, oh, the Lakers could have done more, the Clippers could have done more, all these teams could have done more. But at the end of the day, Lamar has to make decisions himself that he
mm-hmm.
knows
mm-hmm.
if he decides to partake in a drug, that the repercussions of that drug can be life-changing. But at the end of the day, I believe also, too, that the NBA should surround what I call warning players. Any kind of player that has any kind of
yes.
a history of drug or alcohol, the NBA should personally assign a person to basically be with them 24/7 until they can begin to adjust. And if they have an issue, assign that person just to help them get their life together.
Right. Hmm. Sort of like a mentorship.
Yeah, basically, I mean, you look at a person like, you know, Lamar's situation of the things that he's been through and the things he was going through. If you look at the point, if they would have had somebody, even him being away from basketball, just assigned to him and give him the proper, you know, professional help that he needs, get him the proper mentorship. And I don't know if it's so much mentorship. I think it's just guidance because I think an old school pro like a Dr. J or Kareem could have given him a lot of knowledge and a lot of, you know, go to a John Lucas to help him get it together
right.
when it was subjective that he had problems. So now, you know, it's almost costing him his life, and now all of a sudden you have these Lamar Odom, get well, LO, get this, get that, get this. And in reality, were all these people during his career, were all these people when he was sitting there going through some trials and tribulations of his marriage? But, you know, the problem is that, you know, the family that he married into, there's a lot of pressure to be associated with them, and it's a choice that he made, number one. But you look at
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of millionaires with the Kardashian family for having zero talent.
I mean, we all know how the fame came to them, you know. So it didn't take any talent for that. But,
no.
You know, it's great to see him recover the way that he's been recovering. You know, I have spoken to a hospital official who initially, you know, told me everything was grim, you know, and that the only reason he was alive was because of the life support. And, you know, it deeply saddened me because I have been in that situation myself. So
mm-hmm.
I understood what it was like to be Lamar Odom, you know, to come to in a hospital and, you know, with you plugged up to machines and people standing all around you, poking and prodding at you, you know. And I've reached out to him myself a couple times over the years with no response. And yet we can go ahead and have, you know, guys around, like you said, Dr. J and Kareem, guys that are there to help us through, you know. But there are times when we don't want the help. You know, I know for myself,
yeah.
there are times where guys, you know, spoke to me and tried to give me some positive encouragement about staying focused, and I just wasn't hearing it because, number one, I'm making a couple $1 million a year, you know, just like you, so what can you tell me about my life that I need to change, and why should I listen to you? You know, and just feeling entitled to the reckless lifestyle that I was living. You know, like, you can't tell me, a grown man who's making this much, how to live my life. And I think that's pretty much what he was experiencing as well. You know, I'm grown. I've made it this far on my own, you know, so I don't need you. When in fact,
I mean,
we all need somebody. We all need somebody.
Definitely.
You know, at one point in time.
Sweep it under the rug. I think, like, in Lamar's case, he really may need to sit down and speak to a therapist and work out some of the past issues that he's been continuously going through, the cycle of his life and what's going on in his life. Like, yeah, mentor, that can help in as far as, like, the money and transitioning. But to attack some of these issues, maybe the NFL and NBA, I'm sure they do have, like, sports psychologists and WNBA and people to come in to actually sit and speak and hear these athletes and hear what they're going through and understand where they're coming from and help them to get over the hump.
Right. One of the questions that we have from a listener is, why should we give celebrities special passes or consideration when we all have issues and obstacles?
My answer to this is, I don't know what constitutes a pass, because I've seen murderers, I've seen, you know, people who are just in the normal society, these predators and all these guys get slapped on the wrist. I've seen law enforcement officers get slapped on the wrist. So mm-hmm. where are their passes at? Where is their same critique that's going on that they claim an athlete? And my thing is like this. When it comes to, you know, professional athletes, celebrities, unless you really walk that line of life, it's hard for you to place yourself in the aspect of a daily life. I mean, there's been several situations when I eat or be with the family and a person might want an autograph, want a picture, and they don't care what you're doing mm-hmm. and who you're with. Mm-hmm. They are so focused on what their desire and what mm-hmm. their need is. So the point is about getting a right. pass. I don't know what really constitutes a pass, because at the end of the day, the same kind of people, I mean, I've seen athletes be punished. I've seen athletes who haven't been punished, but I've also seen a regular civilian or citizen who's been punished and those who have not been punished. So I don't really think it really boils down to whether you're an athlete or celebrity. I think it boils down to the choices that person makes and what person decides that person's fate.
Right, right, right. That's a great answer, too.
So to piggyback off of that answer, can I ask a question? I know we spoke about celebrityism, right? There's a different level of players on every aspect. You have your stars, you have your superstars, and you have your role players. In a situation where there's just a role player, do you believe that the NBA is more lenient to a superstar getting in trouble? Or, you know, is it the same accountability?
I think for me, personally speaking, I don't know if it's necessary, you know, what you call star treatment, because at the end of the day, you know, you have to realize that as a player, you are part of a union. So the thing is, if any kind of player, you know, thinks that they're getting shortchanged or getting the short end of the stick and decides like, hey, well, if, you know, LeBron James does this, he can do that. But if I do this, I can do that. But at the end of the day, you know, it comes down to what is it really going to be the deciding factor from the Players Association, from the league, et cetera, et cetera. So
mm-hmm.
I personally think
mm-hmm.
it just comes down to, you know, what happens and what the situation is, because Keith and I both know that, you know, as a player, we've seen things that kind of blown us away that maybe have never hit the public channels or
mm-hmm.
even from the league
right.
channels. But at the end of the day, those are just the aspects of life. There is an area called favoritism, and that's just how it is. You can't do anything to change it, and at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to.
Hmm. Okay.
And you got to look at, and you know, this is a business, and they got to look at what's in the best interest of their business. So it's not always going to be, you know, on a personal level for every player of every organization, you know,
mm-hmm,
making
mm-hmm.
sure that their guys are all right. You know, certain guys are going to be, you know, okay, but then there's going to be that small percentage where they'll look at us as being expendable. And, well, we can just go ahead and get another one who's not going to bring the problems that this guy's bringing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of what happened in my case, you know, with me dealing with alcoholism and everything. You know, my behavior had become so outstanding in its insanity that, you know, I immediately became expendable because, you know, they can go ahead and find another young guy out there who's 7 feet tall who can run the floor and block shots just as well as me, or maybe even better. And
mm-hmm.
he's not going to have the issues. He's not going to create the distractions that you know, that I created. You know, and it's going to allow the team to flourish and do what they got to do as a unit.
Mhm. Mhm.
But it's all up to the individual.
I mean, if you look at it like this, you know, I tell people all the time, some of the best pros that turn out are pros that not get all the attention, because the path that they got to become a pro was a lot different. And you look at a lot of guys who are lottery picks and they just are out the league. But, you know, you also look at the situation of the guys that were high draft picks or was supposed to be this and that had a career. But the thing is how come their life after basketball, that same team that they scored hundreds of points or thousands of points, won't even touch him for any kind of situation that they might be in a job that they need a job, or their situation they need help. Where is that same team that they scored for or won a championship for or won a game for? Why are they not calling them up and say, hey, you know what? just on a token of appreciation. I see there's a time of need. We're going to make a job for you. Why does that not ever happen?
Right. If we got another caller, we're going to bring them in to join in with us, Tony. So, Eric code 732-221. Welcome to the stadium on Crossover Radio.
How y'all doing?
Hey,
right.
How you doing?
Hello. I wanted to chime in on the issues with NBA players.
First of all, let us know who you are, where you're from, my man.
Omar, host of Tasty Tuesdays, chiming in, showing support for Stadium.
Oh, what's up, O?
Hey,
what's
Omar.
Up? How y'all doing?
Yeah.
All right.
I think the biggest problem with NBA players is a combination of two things. They go and they all of a sudden live this rock star lifestyle. Like everybody wants to point to the money. I don't think it's the money because you give somebody $20 million that live in some old cornfield out in Wisconsin somewhere, and they're not necessarily going to destroy their life because there's no attention.
They're going to spend their money differently,
yeah. You see what I'm saying? So when you enter the NBA and you become a certain name, like, okay, Lamar Odom, for example. This guy played for the Lakers on a two-time NBA championship team. You don't think when he stepped off them planes and walked to them airports and they looked at the Kobe Bryants and they looked at them and they looked at Lamar Odom. Like, for a long time, he was that guy. He was that name. He was that face. Lamar Odom probably went almost his whole career without any conflicts or issues. But everything came about when all that started to go away. He went to Dallas. You know, he started becoming this journeyman. He didn't get the attention that he once had. And on the backside of that is, who do you have in your life, in your ear, that's giving you that guidance to say, hey, look, this is going to come, this is what's going to happen, and eventually it's going to go away.
Right, that's what Tony touched on.
Yeah, like the early part of Michael Jordan's career, he had his father. Pretty much through the whole, you know, flashes and lights of him becoming Michael Jordan, his father was there. He lost his father in the midst of his career when he was pretty much used to being Michael Jordan. You know, LeBron James, I'm pretty sure he got more than enough people, you know, how to build walk-ins and this person
he's very leveled.
School
yeah.
to, you know, watch him play and see this. I'm pretty sure they pulled that kid to the side and said, look, this is what you're about to go through. This is what's going to happen. You know, but when it comes unexpectedly for players like Lamar Odom and they don't have that background with them, and their life becomes this certain, like, you know, I like to call it that rock star lifestyle.
Yeah.
Then it goes away
all
of a sudden, and it's like, what do I do? You know, and then you probably go to the parties and you see this person. So now a lot of them reach out to just try to hold on to something. And a lot of times they fall into that trap of what, let's say, you know, Lamar Odom fell into. It's just I'm trying to hold on to something. You know,
okay. So, Tony, would you like to elaborate on that, Tony? Do you have anything to add to that? Thank you, Omar.
My thing is, you know, a lot of times, you know, he's right, people focus on so much of the money, when in reality you got to focus on the individual because at the end of the day, when that individual comes into the fold of being a professional athlete, he's subjected to a lot of pressure from the minute they call his name as a draft pick to the minute those lights turn on that he's on the floor. And the pressures that, you know, everybody handles pressure different. I mean, a CEO might handle pressure different than a professional athlete. A professional athlete might handle the situation different than the president himself. But I think at the end of the day, when you really look at the aspect of the pressures that, you know, people in general wake up to on a daily basis their own life, I think it really comes down to the choices that we make because we all are subjected to choices. Whether you're an athlete or you're not an athlete, your choices remain the same. If you choose to break the law,
right.
You can break the law as an athlete, you can break the law as an individual. It doesn't matter. So when you look at, you know, from a Lamar standpoint, you know, they say, well, you know, his marriage was this. But at the end of the day, for him to leave the Lakers, to go to Dallas, to go to all over the place, and then you got, you know, you look at the players like a Stephon Marbury that, you know, he was doing things that guys couldn't even figure out what his problem was. But then he said, you know what, I'm going to be out the limelight. I'm going to go to China and build my brand. Now he's a legend over there. So at the end of the day, we all have choices to make. It just depends on what you decide to do with the opportunity that presents itself. Because you can be, you know, you can build a great life for yourself if you decide what type of legacy you want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right, we have another caller. Hey, thanks, Omar. Okay. Thanks for calling. I'm not sure. Did we have a? No, we don't have. I thought we did. All right. You know, yeah, being rich and, you know, having fame are two different monsters.
Definitely.
You know, and it's, you know, it's either way. I mean, you said it, Tony. We all have decisions that we have to make. You know, everybody wakes up having to face something. And, you know, the next thing is, okay, what's the decision that we're going to make afterwards? You know, and it goes from there. Not everybody's always going to turn to alcohol or drugs. Not everybody's always going to turn to crime. You know, some people have a friend, a shoulder to lean on. Some people have that mentor or that basketball coach or that one teacher from back in middle school they were close to, you know, that they always felt comfortable speaking to, or that family member. You know, for me,
correct.
I have my mother that I can go ahead and run things off of, you know, when I have things on my mind. And I know she's not going to tell me something, you know, based up just from, well, you're my son, I'm just going to, you know, I want you to, it's not going to be out of favoritism, it's going to be out of genuine care. You know, I'm going to get a real answer, whether I'm right or wrong. I'm going to get a real answer, you know, and I can use that, you know, in my day-to-day life and continue to become successful. Or I can ignore her words like I used to when I was younger, and we see how well that worked out for me. You know,
it was a learning point.
You also look at this, you know, at the end of the day, we all have choices. I don't care if you come from parents. I don't care if you come from no parents. At the end of the day, you know, if you murder somebody, that's not legal. You know, if you decide to drink and drive, you're not supposed to do that. So for me, you know, my sympathy goes to a certain extent. I mean, I don't never wish bad on anyone, but we all are grown-ups and we make these decisions. But at the end of the day, it really depends on what your commitment to the game of life is, you know, because, you know, God's never going to give you more than you can handle. But at the end of the day, he puts his toughest soldiers through the biggest form of adversity. And I tell people all the time, I was telling a young kid last night, I said, listen, people come into your life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. It is up to you to literally decide how long they stay. So, you know, the choices that we make and the things that we do, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know what, Keith, I failed, man, but I'm ready to get it together. Do you have anybody that you know that can help me? But a lot of times you find athletes, celebrities, and just people in general are too proud to say that they have a problem, because the first situation to a problem is recognition. Once you recognize that you have a problem, then you have the ability to address that problem. You know, my parents own 4 drug recovery homes. And my mom sent me a text message at 5:30 this morning because she was so disappointed, her and my dad, this weekend, that they had a guy who just graduated from their program and then all of a sudden went on a job interview. From the job interview, went to a strip club, got high, and now he's back in the program starting all over again. So, you know, I don't know why he did that. You know, you don't have the answers, but, you know, my parents were definitely disappointed, but at the end of the day, they also know that the creation of that is not short-lived. It is a chronic problem that's going to be, that demon's going to be inside that person's life. So the thing about it is Lamar, you know, speaking of him, had a situation that, you know, is life-threatening, but, you know, he's going to constantly battle that for the rest of his life until he decides to make a choice like you make, Keith, that he's tired of being sick and tired of being high, drunk, and everything like that. And he should know now, between his 2 closest friends he loses and his own life, he's got to make some life. He got to make some choices. It's going to be some of the toughest ones.
Right. And I'm really hopeful that he does finally accept some help and recognize that this is, you know, this may be his last shot, you know, because he came so close to losing his life. And
I mean, to piggyback off of that, the question was asked, like, sometimes that they don't know they're in a cycle. Sometimes you can't recognize, don't know you're in dysfunction. If you don't know you're in dysfunction, you can't make a change. And a lot of,
that's
I think a lot of these, like even just the example you just gave the young man, now he's back in the program. Maybe Lamar didn't know he was in dysfunction. and he still doesn't know. Maybe hopefully this is his last chance and he will get right by this. I personally feel like it was all downfall when he got traded. The man did not want to be traded. He literally begged the Lakers to keep him.
But this is a business.
It is a business, and we understand that. But for Lamar, like, he mentally, psychology, like, he could not grasp that concept. Knowing his background, understanding that, like, you can see why.
I mean, he had been traded once before, so, you know, it should have registered to him. He had been traded before. You know, he started with the L.A. Clippers, you know, and he went off from there. You know,
he was in Hollywood. He didn't want to leave Hollywood.
You know, but Hollywood is overrated. You know, it really is, and it's the place where you got a lot of leeches out here who are just looking for somebody to latch on to, and
mm-hmm.
you know, to allow them to get their 15 minutes of fame. You know, and not everybody in Hollywood is like that, but there are a lot of people out here who are just like that. You know, Tony mentioned it. You know, they're here for the moment. You know, you have those sometimey people who are in your
mm-hmm.
life. Sometimes they'll answer those calls when you need them, and sometimes they won't because, you know, what do you have for them at the end of the day? What's in it for them? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Somebody mentioned that this was a real wake-up call for them. But how can it be a real wake-up call for them? What are they doing with everything else that's happening every day outside our doors? You know, are they really that out of tune with everyday life? You know, because every corner that you turn just about in the inner city, you got that wino, you have that homeless person,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know, who's
mm-hmm.
out there panhandling at the gas station trying to get some change to get something to eat or sometimes get something to drink. You know, but why does it take for one more celebrity to have an incident for them to say, oh, this is a wake-up call. This is something that we needed to see. We see it every single day, but do we choose to see it or do we really choose to just ignore it?
Well, I mean, when you look at it like this, it's like, you know, when a person has problems, the person has issues, how many times are you gonna keep sweeping up under the rug? You know what I mean? How many times
mm-hmm,
are you gonna
mm-hmm.
feel be in denial when you know for a fact that your worst enemy is yourself. So because you know that and because you're aware of that, how much and how many times are you going to constantly subject yourself to the same situation? I mean, at some point,
right.
you got to take some accountability yourself.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Right. Okay. We wanted to talk about, you know, one of the biggest acquisitions of the season, you know, and that's Ron Artest, Metta World Peace, rejoining the Lakers again. And, you know, you were there with him this summer. You know, we both played ball with him throughout the summer here in Los Angeles. But, you know, people don't understand the hard work that man has put in. And,
oh, yeah.
And you were right there with him. You know, you and I have spoken about it, you know, prior to him signing and how he just needed one more opportunity. So we saw the work he had been putting in. The people were saying he was washed up. He didn't stand a chance. Here he is once again, a member of the Los Angeles Lakers. And, you know, walk us through your experience with him, you know, through that process to get to that point.
Well, I mean, mainly the thing that you know, dealing with Metta last year, you know, I met with him several times even before he went to China, and he was talking to me about potentially helping him get to China and the connections. I met with his assistant, Heidi, and start talking to him and, you know, became closer to him. He said, you know, I want to prepare myself to have a chance to come back to the league. So he went over to China, then he went over to Italy after that and played with Cantu and kind of honed his skills. When I say honed his skills, not so much of how great he was as a basketball player, to figure out, you know, what he wanted his next move to be. And he went over there
right.
and he had a chance to network with some great people. He did well and came back. And when he came back this summer, you know, him and I and know, start talking. We start working out all the time, you know, from the gym to shooting to working out. And then he asked me to play with him in the Drew League. And so we play in the Drew League. And then we play 5-on-5 at UCLA. And then we go, you know, right over to Westwood Rec on Wednesdays. And then from that standpoint, we go and play at the Lakers facilities on Mondays and Wednesdays at 9:30. And I watched him every day, and he was killing some of the Laker guys, and I was playing there with him. And, you know, it's funny because Byron had told some of the guys, was like, Tony's 45 and Meta's, you know, 35, 36. Why are they keeping up with our young guys, you know, like they're not even there? So the point is that, you know, his determination that he wanted to get back to the league, and I believe the path that he's taken to get back, he deserves it. So when people are like, oh, he's washed up and he was doing all that, you know, it's favoritism or this, but they don't realize the man has been
in shape. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he put in the work, and he deserves that spot. Honestly, can tell you he deserves that spot.
Mm-hmm.
So for people to say, oh, he doesn't deserve it or he's washed up, then how come the first preseason game he was down there down by 19 when he came in, he made a difference, they were down by one? I don't care if it's preseason, regular season, playoff, it doesn't matter. For a person to come in and make that impact, he's deserving of that spot. So, you know, I'm always a supporter of him. I was even talking to Byron this summer, and Byron was like, you know, he's looking good. And when me and Meta started talking, he was like, you know what? I have some teams that are interested in Lakers, one of them. He said, I'd go to the Lakers with an unguaranteed contract before I go to some other teams with a guaranteed contract because I want to be here. And I feel he deserves it, and that's why he's there.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And you know, there's got to be something special about an organization to make a player say that. You know, they're willing to go for the unguaranteed contract because most guys, they want a guaranteed spot. They want to know that if they go there, you know, they're going to stay. But for Meta to say he's willing to go for the unguaranteed, that, you know, even though they're having their struggles, that speaks volumes for them. That speaks volumes for that organization.
No, for sure. And the thing is, you know, if you look at him now, you'll see him on the bench, you know, talking to guys. You'll see him, you know, doing his thing. For him, it's not about how much playing time he's getting. It's more or less of how much of an impact he can create. And at the end of the day, you know, he's also making a difference in the locker room that, you know, in his younger days, he didn't have that impact. You know,
right.
he was so focused on being the player and being, you know, who he was. But if you look at him now, he's a lot more mild mannered. That's why he put his own team in the Drew, because his aspiration is the coach. He wants to coach and he wants to mentor 100%.
That's right. And as far as you know, what are you doing as far as mentoring these younger guys?
I mean, I pretty much, you know, give guys direction when I'm asked. I don't sit there and go way out of my way to do that. I mean, I've been focused on my other business dealings, as you know. Like, you know, me and Cedric have our own company and kind of been building that. But, you know, when I see a guy and talk to them, I always give them words of encouragement. I had a chance to become close to Damian Lillard ever since his rookie year. So, you know, behind the scenes, I text and talk to him. I had a great talk with him this summer when he came as well. So I just try to encourage guys to tell them that, you know, whatever plan that you have, start preparing for your life or after basketball, even before your career ends. Because my experience, I tell guys all the time, if you learn how to be a businessman early, you're going to learn how to be a better basketball player, because of the fact that when you have to make decisions in your business life, and not just focus on 100% of just everything's basketball, 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 you're going to learn what it takes to run a company. You're going to learn what it takes to hire an assistant, or you learn what it takes to build a business over things that can really, you know, change your life forever. So I just try to tell young guys all the time, whatever impact that you're making and whatever decisions you want to make and whatever things you want to do, focus on those, because – as an athlete, as a celebrity, the thing that people have all the time is time. And you get bored. You'll get to the point like you're like, oh, my gosh, I have nothing to do. What's wrong with reading a book and learning how to become a business person? You're having all that money. But I tell people all the time, there's a difference between being wealthy and being rich. And business people are wealthy. Athletes are rich because they know they can get taken away from them in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay, I have a question.
Absolutely.
That's completely left field. How do you guys feel about Booby Gibson stepping away from the game to pursue a rapping career?
I think that's the decision that I've never seen someone make when you go from an athlete to a rapper, because of the fact. But, you know, a big subjective of that, you know, in my opinion, is the fact that, you know, he was married to that type of person. You know what I mean? So that's why he's done that. But I just think it's another situation that he's struggling for identity. So because he struggles with identity, he feels that, you know, if I rap, people are going to know me again. But in reality, they don't care. I mean, you rapping and everything like that, they don't care about that because at the end of the day, you know, what does that matter? Shaq can rap. Shaq has bars. He dropped the album and everything, but he knew that wasn't his walk of life, but he's a hell of a businessman. I mean, he don't sit there and just blow money, and I guarantee you, you'll never hear him broke. Guaranteed you'll never hear him broke.
Right.
Oh, Shaq has figured it out tremendously.
And that, you know, that man, he understood, you know, from an early age that he was his best business, and he absolutely capitalized off of it, and he continues to this day.
Okay, we have a question from a caller. What is your advice on helping to heal an ACL? A caller's 14-year-old son tore his ACL. How would you suggest?
My advice is basically is to work hard to get it back, but don't let the mental challenges outweigh the physical challenges, because the biggest thing of rehab is mental. Your body's going to respond according to what your mindset is.
Ooh, that could tap into The Secret a little bit. You ever read that book, Tony, The Secret?
Yes, I've read it.
Phenomenal book. Amazing book. My opinion.
There you go.
Well, hey, Tony, I want to, you know, thank you, man, for joining us today.
Of course.
And, wish you continued success with everything you're doing. And also, we had a game this Sunday afternoon, yesterday, as a matter of fact, in the Drew League's 40 and over league, and they put a hurting on us pretty good. And I just want to let you know and appreciate that. But you know, basketball doesn't stop for us. You know, even at our ages, you know, I'm 39 and still getting out there and, you know, and doing what I can do. And you're still out there, and like you said, you were out there all summer playing with the Lakers players and getting them ready and, you know, and being there, showing them how to be professionals, you know, and showing them that, you know, that the age doesn't stop you as long as you got the desire and the ability.
Age is what you make of it. I mean, people look at me being 45 and still dunking. I'm like, how can I? I was like, because you have to realize the only thing I've ever done is I stopped contractually. I haven't stopped physically. I haven't stopped playing the game, and I keep myself in shape. As you know, Keith, and people say, oh, you're a freak of nature. No, it's not a freak of nature. Just my mindset is so strong and my determination is so good that, you know what, I always have a point to prove. I tell a young guy in a minute, I don't care how young you are, you're going to have to keep up with me. I'm not going to keep up with you. You got to keep up with me. And, you know, a lot of these young guys, it's their mindset. That's all it is. I don't care how high you jump. If somebody is 7'1", 320 at the rim, you can jump as high as you can. You're not going through him. Genetically, it's not happening. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think, you know, more people have to continue to help people as opposed to ridicule them and say, hey, you know what? I know you're going through some things, but, you know, our job is to reach out to them. But our job is not to sit there and nurture somebody who doesn't want to be nurtured.
Right. They got to be willing to put in the work as well.
Right.
Definitely.
Well, I appreciate
you guys
having me, and I'm glad you guys had this show, and I continue to wish you guys much success in the game of life and also with this show as well. So I appreciate the time.
Well, thank you so much, Tony.
Well, man, and hopefully I can count on you later on down the line, you know, to join us again sometime in the future.
All right, no problem. Take care. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, bro.
All right.
All right. Man, we've got a lot of wise words there from Tony Farmer. You know, he's a man that's well-traveled and, you know, educated as well. You know, not just in basketball, but in life and in business. And he made a good point of, you know, players needing to think about life after basketball, life after their respective sport. You know, what would they be doing if they didn't make it to the NBA, or, you know, God forbid, they have an injury. And speaking of injuries, what's going on with that knee?
Really? I still need surgery. I'll get it eventually.
Get it, or you know, I'll be throwing rocks at you in your wheelchair as you roll by. I'm that kind of friend. I'll do that to you. You know, I say you're a great addition to the show. Unfortunately, Penny couldn't join us. He's taking care of some personal issues and had to step away for a while. It would have been an awesome, you know, three-way deal here with us. And, you know, in the meantime, you did a great job, you know, and it's this is like regular conversation, you know, with your kin folks, man, and trying to help people along the way at the same time, you know.
Definitely.
So today's show,
I want to tap in more about the, because it's on every level, you know, the transition of even if the people that can't transition to the NBA or from the NBA to regular life, like college athletes having to learn how to transition into being regular adults after they retire at, what, 21, 22?
Right.
Like,
that's why it's so important. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
No. Just the mental, the depression of it all that goes into it. It's on every level I see. If you don't know how to transition, if you don't have the right people to inform you, if you don't have the right, I can't even say it's just based on, I know Tony said earlier, you know, if you have the right family support to do this, that, and the third. But some, like you guys said earlier, it's a lot of us aren't coming from the households where we have parents that know beyond that or even who even went to college to even understand college athletics or who played in the NBA, you know, that can help transition. So I think that they need to step up a little bit more and do a little bit more for these athletes, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it also tells us why it's so important for our student athletes to take advantage of, you know, the blessing that they've got with receiving a free education. You know, go ahead and get that degree. You know, get that degree. Because, you know, basketball is quick money. Sports is just quick money. But you get that degree, you know, you're setting yourself up for long money, for a real career that you can sit back and, you know, and watch grow into your later years in life.
But we get these degrees and don't know how to use them. Because we don't have on campus, nobody tells us to go to the student union or go to career to help you get an internship or... Because the schools are kind of just using the athletes and they're not really helping for life after sports, pretty much.
Right. So would you say that, you know, some of us former athletes need to go back to our universities as well and lend a hand in that area?
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. And we need to start giving back. I personally have started to go back on campus now. One, we have a great coach over at Fordham University. And Stephanie Gatley, and she's now welcome alumni back to Fordham University to feel comfortable enough to even come back to help. The football team over there has a program that's already funded, which was started by former football players, of giving their football, the current students, internships with different companies. So now I've taken it upon myself to personally do that for the women's team, figure out a way to do this for the women's team. I did not have that. I did not have somebody to tell me to get an internship or make connections with professors and deans and different people that can help me. I wanted to be a professional athlete. I think they kind of just let me build myself to be a professional athlete. My career ended 2.5 years later from a broke finger. So I graduated from Fordham University with this great degree, but no, I don't have any work experience. I think, so to answer your question, I've been through it. So now it is my responsibility to now not only give back to Fordham University, but to set something up in Newark as well. I know too many stories of the athletes that, you know, just did not know, and we come home and it's just like, well, what do we do now? How many homeless athletes do I know who've graduated from college? How many athletes do I know who have these great degrees that end up working at McDonald's as a first job? How does that happen? Just my thoughts, though. I'm sorry to go all the way in.
Yeah. And you know what? That's great. That's great. And, you know, continued success with that as well. And you're definitely going to make a very positive impact in the communities you know, especially in Newark where these kids need it. But just like other communities around the United States, you know, they absolutely need it. And, you know, people like you and myself and Tony, you know, just making ourselves available will go so far. And it'll really make a positive impact.
Because your story alone is amazing, Keith. So I'm glad you actually are giving back to and sharing and being open with that.
Right. See, and also, you know, you spoke about how an injury derailed you from following through with your aspirations, you know, and people need to be mindful of that. That's why I said, you know, it's necessary, it's absolutely necessary that they take advantage of this opportunity of receiving a free education. Yeah, the university is using you for your athletic abilities, but use them as well for the educational purposes, because that's what's really going to set you up in the long run for the rest of your life. Absolutely.
Definitely.
We've come to the end of the show here, and we thank all of you callers who listened and the people who had questions for us and for Tony. And, you know, hopefully next time you guys be willing to join in the conversation as well. Definitely shout out to Omar, our Tasty Tuesday family
here, Omar,
on Crossover Radio. Thank you for calling in, my man. Greatly appreciated. Ms. Jada, any parting words?
No, just great show. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, every week we're looking forward to possibly bringing on another guest caller and you know, discussing the day's issues or the week's issues and, you know, bringing a good time here for you people on Crossover Radio here at the stadium.
Definitely.
All right, so we're out of here.
All righty. Have a good night. Peace out.
Peace.